Buddha. This may be two little talks in one. I talked recently on Uji, and there's this amazing paragraph in Uji. It's like the third paragraph where Dogen says, "Upon this earth, many things appear and many forms of grass exist. Each thing that appears in each grass is in no way separate from the whole earth. It is after reaching this viewpoint that we can commence training, the all is one. For having reached this point in our journey's end, but one thing appears and one grass remains." I just think this is the most wonderful description of the all is one recognizing the all is different, of the Buddha nature of things, of the world around us recognized fully. And when it says, after reaching this viewpoint that we can commence or begin training, Vermessi used to say the first real realization is the real beginning of training. "For having reached this point in our journey's end," that's an amazing way to put it, "but one thing appears and one grass remains." And that is, this is all about the eternal and the love of the eternal. Life is about the eternal, the love of the eternal, and our return to our true home, our harmonization with the eternal. The one grass is the eternal. The challenge of life to find the eternal in everything, in every circumstance, to come to the point where our heart bows to every circumstance in life, and to where the inner light of faith and of that inextinguishable joy that springs right from the Buddha nature is always present, no matter what the more surface level of darkness may be. The reason why it says, "for having reached this point in our journey's end," because there's nothing to achieve. If everything is Buddha, then this very moment of my confusion is Buddha. So what more can I add to that except to bow to it and be still within it? And there is such a thing as a precept. One can't carry anything too far without having it fall apart. One can't say that everything I do is therefore Buddha and I can do whatever I want. Because what about karmic consequence? That's Buddha too. What about pain? Why bring down unnecessary pain on oneself and on others? Why create more of the confusion that blinds us to the Buddha nature? That's what the precepts are about. Don't do that which confuses you about where you are in your journey's end. So there's a wonderful description of someone coming to this. And this is the wonderful story of Tozan's enlightenment. I'm reading this from Dr. Ku's History of Zen, of which there's almost no copies anywhere. I don't know, probably 1,000 copies or less printed, 500 or something printed. But Dr. Ku came and visited her master. He was a professor at University of Pennsylvania. Rimmaster had a lot of respect for him, and he for Rimmaster. And he's doing research into the lineages of the Zen schools, to the history of the Zen schools through their lineages. And she's the only layperson I know that she ever showed her silks to show her connection with Ko Zenji. And of course, she's mentioned in here the Dharma heir of Ko Zenji. So Tozan was a monk who had been, I don't know how long he'd been training, but he'd, according to Dogen, he'd gone a long ways in training. Still there was something missing. And he went to Master Ungan and he said, "What kind of man is able to hear the teaching of Dharma through non-sentient beings?" And that's another way of saying the same thing. What Dogen says, upon this earth many things appear and many forms of grass exist. That each thing that appears in each grass is no way separate from the whole earth. And this is just another way of saying the same thing. He's asking about that. He says, what kind of man is able to recognize Buddha nature in all things and to find the truth in all things, to see through the surface appearance of things and recognize the truth in all things and to be taught by all things? And he is, Tozan has this doubt. He has this doubt about Master Ungan and probably about every other master he's met, every other teacher he's met. Is this the person who's enlightened? And that's the wrong question to ask if you're going to train with someone. That doesn't get you anywhere. You need to be listening to your own heart, not trying to decide with your head who is enlightened and who isn't. One's heart will guide one to one's true master. The master replied, Ungan replied, "The Dharma taught by non-sentient things can be heard by non-sentient things." He's just kind of putting a block in front of him. He's just putting a verbal block in front of him, saying basically, you're running around in your head. You know, it's not your problem about what the non-sentient things do or don't do. Your problem is you. And he's saying, I recognize there's doubt in you. Then Tozan, that exposes the doubt. And Tozan says, can you hear it? Can you find the Buddha nature in everything? Ungan says, if I can hear it, you will not hear my teaching the Dharma. Another block. Another saying no to his doubt. Says, really, this means, whether or not I can hear it is not your problem. Your problem is, you ain't getting it. That's your problem. Tozan said, if this is so, it means that I do not hear you teaching the Dharma. See, he's smart. He's clever. He keeps finding a way around, trying to find a way around. And then Ungan says, when I taught the Dharma, you did not hear it. How can you expect to be taught by non-sentient things? And he's just facing him with the truth about himself, saying, you know, you're looking in the wrong direction. You're looking at other people, trying to see if they're enlightened or not, and if they can teach you, if they're fit to teach you. You're proud. And you're doubting, and you need to turn within and work on yourself. Then Tozan composed a poem and presented it to the master. He doesn't give up. And it's a good poem, and it's true. It is strange indeed. Dharma taught by non-sentient things is unthinkable. Listening through your ears, you cannot hear the sound, but you will understand if you listen by your eyes. Rim Mass used to talk about that when I was a novice. In other words, it's a way of, she says, you have to be able to hear with your eyes and see with your ears. And it's talking about not really the physical organs, but the sense organs. It's talking about making that jump to trusting instinct. Intuition, spiritual intuition, that little light of faith, that within you which already knows the eternal, that little spark of true wisdom that's within every human being, within every being. He's saying, Rim Master was saying, you need to trust that. And Tozan's had some glimpse of this. You know, he actually knows this, but it ain't going to do him any good while he's in this state of doubt about the master, you see. He's still got the doubt. He's still looking outside himself. So then Tozan left. And he's basically saying, you know, I'm too good for you. You know, you're not a good enough teacher for me. And Ungan said, "Where are you going?" And Tozan says, "Oh, I am leaving you. I have not known where to go." It's probably literally the truth. You know, he didn't know where he's going. But in his kind of deluded state, he probably means something really kind of, you know, zenny by that. But Ungan doesn't buy anything he says. So Ungan simply says, "Are you going to Hunan?" And Tozan says, "No." And Ungan says, "Are you going home?" And Tozan says, "No." And Ungan says, "You will come back sooner or later." In other words, you know, you're not going to get out of this by going somewhere else. You're not going to escape from what's inside you by going somewhere else. And Tozan says, "If the master has an abiding place, I will come." He's being a smartass. He really is. And he's lucky Ungan didn't get him a good clobber. Ungan says, "It would be difficult to meet after your departure." He keeps it grounded in practical life, saying basically, you know, you may be doing this kind of thing in your head where, you know, everywhere we go, you know, we're together or whatever. But the fact is, you're leaving and you're missing your opportunity. And Tozan said, it would be difficult not to meet again. And then he said further, after 100 years, meaning after the master's passing, that's what Dr. Koo says, and people ask me how my master looks, I don't know how to answer. And finally, actually, the doubt's coming out there. And, I mean, he's actually expressing the doubt in a more straightforward, less delusional way. And Ungan simply says, "You have to be careful about such things." You have to be careful about such things. He's not saying, you know, you're wrong. He's simply saying, you know, you're leaving here with something deeply unresolved. You're not escaping from it. So, Tozan, it says here, Tozan kept his doubts. You know, he's got that iron ball that he can't swallow and he can't spit it out. He's got great doubt. Then later, and it didn't say how long later, but it probably wasn't too long afterwards, he was crossing some body of water, a pond or something, and he saw his image reflected. And suddenly, something clicked with him. He understood, it says here, he understood the teaching of Ungan. But you really could say he's understanding what Ungan was pointing to about himself. He saw his reflection of himself in water, and it triggered. I think basically he just saw that Ungan was saying, you need to look at yourself and stop looking at others. You need to work on yourself and stop focusing about others. Because really all doubt about others is really just the externalized doubt about oneself. All these questions he's asking about the master are really about himself. And it goes back to that root of self-judgment in the karmic stream, that I'm not good enough to find the eternal in all things. That's what underlies it. And then Tozan came up with a true verse. A verse that's not the other one was wrong, because it's not, but it wasn't. It was still just the verbal truth isn't enough. There has to be the truth of the heart. And this one is the truth of the heart. It's one of the most famous things in Zen, of course. And I'm going to read Reverend Master's translation here because it's such a magnificent translation of this poem. "Truly I should not seek for the truth from others, for then it will be far from me. Now I am going alone. Everywhere I am able to meet him. He is me now, I am not him. When we understand this, we are instantaneously one with the truth." We are instantaneously with the truth. Because there never was a division between us and the truth. It only exists in our own heads and our own judgment of ourselves. See, he was trying to pry the truth. So many people do this. They try to pry the truth out of a master. They try to, is this master good enough to teach me? You'll never get anywhere with that. You're going to be taught by an utter fool if you are really working on yourself. The Eternal uses all things to point to itself. Of course, Tozan wrote the most excellent Mirror Samadhi, which we recite in morning service. And that's where the line, in the most excellent Mirror Samadhi, which is a long poem, well, kind of not real long, it's not like the Iliad or the Odyssey, but it's a longer poem than this, which is really a description of the process of training, with emphasizing the master-disciple relationship throughout. But what is it right near the beginning? I am not him, he is all of me. That's from this insight he had at this point, this genuine enlightenment, not a partial enlightenment. Now I am going alone. Everywhere I am able to meet him, he is me now. I am not him. See, that's what he hadn't got. I am not him. It's funny that in our doubt and self-judgment, we're playing God with ourselves. And we're playing God, deciding that we're not part of God. That's a funny little paradox there. And the thing we have, the first step in training is to, as Rick Massey says, to get out of God's seat and do some bows. It's hard to keep the initial humility to the end, said Kazan. It's hard to keep the initial humility. What is the attitude with which I came to this training when I was just a young man? Well, very confused, that's for sure. I was very confused, and there was something in me that kept being willing to accept correction. There's something in me that kept being willing to admit, well, maybe I'm wrong here, or I wouldn't have stuck it out. Because in the early days, this is true for many of us, in the early days I was getting corrected all over the place, and some of them very hard knocks. Now, when I was just first at the Abbey, I was, swollen-headed little twit, and Rune Master finally caught me good, and boy, she gave me a kick that just about sent me into the stratosphere. And I remember after that, I was working with a wheelbarrow, trucking rocks, and I was mad, I was trucking those rocks, I was really mad at Rune Master, and then I caught myself. I thought, if I carry on like this, if I continue like this, I'm not going to be able to stay here and learn from her. I dropped it right there. I dropped it. Swollen-headed, yes. Confused, yes. Full of greed, hate, and delusion, yes. But also knowing I needed help. I mean, humble enough. Now, at least now and then, to accept the fact that I needed help, that I couldn't just do it on my own. Be careful about this, by this, I'm going alone now. Going alone doesn't mean rejecting the Sangha refuge. It means not going around insisting that everyone else measure up to one's own ideas of what enlightenment should be. It means being responsible for oneself, taking responsibility for one's own karma and one's own attitudes. Not going around kind of hungry ghosting off teachers. Prior to this, he was partly enlightened. He'd had some realization. What Dogen says about him is interesting. He says that the priest Tozan, who followed Isan and Ungan, could do everything instantaneously. He could lecture with his whole body, but there was something missing in him. So Ungan said to him, in order to understand the truth, study in detail. Tozan then left Ungan and went elsewhere. Suddenly he was enlightened and uttered the following verse, which I've already read. And that's a very, very distilled version of what's longer, you know, longer little story. But basically, when in this other story, it's kind of the tail end of it, the longer version, when Ungan says, you have to be careful about such things, that's the study in detail. If you remember, I've told this story before, but when Dogen was transmitted by Tendon Yojo, Dogen was very young, and he knew a lot of Buddhism. He'd been a monk since he was 12 years old, was it? He wanted to be a monk since he was 8, and his uncle let him become a monk when he was 12. And he started in Tendai, then he went to Rinzai, then he eventually went to China and found his transmission masters, true master in Tendon Yojo. Although he already received a Rinzai transmission, but he was still very confused. And when Nyojo transmitted him, Dogen had a whole bunch of kind of somewhat in the head questions he asked him. And in a kind of gentle way, Nyojo said, that's fine, you know, but study in detail. Do not think it is easy. Because the study in detail is a constant, you know, working on ourselves. There's always something about ourselves we need to work on. And what does it matter if someone else is or is not enlightened, including Zen masters in the end? What matters to me is whether I'm getting it or not. And I can only take sure steps forward in the spiritual life if I'm keeping my grounding in that truth, that I'm responsible for me, other people responsible for themselves. And a genuine, from the heart acceptance of this truth is that I am going alone now. That's where the doubt falls away. Talking about this, I think I've been coming up to talk about this. It's in a bigger context. My feeling is that we're in a time in the life of our sangha when it's particularly important to treasure and to remember remember the profundity of the teaching in our own tradition, and especially this pure stream of teaching that's been passed on through River Master Jiu to us, and this kind of no nonsense grounded understanding that we're here to do something about ourselves. We're not here to change the whole world. We're not here to participate in the more worldly aspects of religion and to involve ourselves in them. We're here to do the essential contemplative work of reharmonization with the eternal. And there's this pure stream of transmitted teaching going back centuries. And this heart-to-heart transmission from master to disciple that conveys this as much as it can be conveyed from one person to another. In the end, that conveying means everyone has to discover it for themselves, don't they? And find within their own life, their own heart, within their own relationship with the Eternal, find what true contentment is. The more we look outside ourselves, the more we think we are lacking, the more we blind ourselves to the treasure that's right under our own feet. Remember that one of our scriptures says, if you in ancient footsteps wish to walk, observe examples old. And this is what I've talked about today, is one of the examples old. It's a long time ago, back at what, his toes on, around 900 AD, something like that. You know, he was Chinese. Tozan's a Japanese form of Tungshan. In the 800s, 807 to 869 AD, Tozan. That was a long time ago. That was in the absolute heyday of Chinese Zen. It was in this, when Chinese Zen was undergoing this, when Chinese Buddhism was going this immense, amazing transformation that flowered in the Zen schools, at the Chan schools. And this was before there was actually the distinction of the schools. But of course, Tozan was regarded after his lifetime as one of the founders of the Sao Tung or Soto school. It's our school of Buddhism, our Zen school. They took So from Sozan, his disciple, and To from Tozan, Soto. Make the term Soto. But that was after their death that the founding of this school was attributed to them. And it's really just a way of saying how much their teaching is valued, really. So if you in ancient footsteps wish to walk, observe examples old. And don't worry about who's enlightened and who is not. Just listen to, you know, your own heart. That's where the truth is to be found, within our own heart. What other people get up to is their problem. What I get up to is my problem. Each man his karma makes and must carry for himself. And woman too, for that matter. That's talk number one. Talk number two is much shorter. It's another subject altogether. To address a particular situation. It's just a general principle with regard to how we perpetuate karma. That people who think of themselves as victims make themselves into perpetrators. People who think of themselves as victims make themselves into perpetrators. In other words, people who think of themselves as being the victims of injustice, unfairness, other people's mistreatment, when they think of themselves in that way and dwell upon those thoughts and nurture the kind of feelings that go with those ways of thinking, they inevitably result in creating themselves into exactly what it is they think that they're the victim of. And this is how the swing goes karmically between perpetrator and victim. It can swing through lifetimes, and it can swing in one person in a matter of minutes or hours. And here's the thing that underlies it all, of course, is that old thing of dropping the hammer of self-judgment on ourselves. People think of themselves as victims. You know, are victimizing themselves somewhere. Because even if they have been the victims of others' mistreatment, you know, if that's in the past and is not happening at this very moment, then why is one dwelling on it? You know, we recreate what others have done to us and keep a chip on our shoulder, then we look for the opportunity to get back at others, you know, with that chip on our shoulder. So we need to be really careful. I'm talking about this because this is a karmically really ripe time. There's a lot of karma ripening, working its way up to the surface to get some spiritual help. And this is an area where we really have to watch it. River Master used to say over and over again, the two things you especially have to watch for, you know, is sex and anger. Sex and anger. Grasping after love and striking out in resentment. Two opposites, again. We really have to watch our emotional urges and the way in which and the kind of thoughts that we nurture. Above everything else, we need to meditate. We need to meditate.